This episode is brought to you by Klaviyo. Did you know that top brands drive 50% of their e-commerce revenue with Klaviyo? Consolidate your channels, including email, SMS, mobile push, and reviews, and centralize and use data from across your tech stack to grow your business and revenue faster and more efficiently than ever. Power smarter digital relationships with the platform built for e-commerce. To learn more, head to klaviyo.com/glossy. That's klaviyo.com/glossy. Hello, and welcome back to the Glossy Week in Review podcast. I'm your host, senior fashion reporter Danny Parisi, and I'm here with our editor-in-chief, Jill Manoff. Hello, Jill. How are you?
Fresh from Shop Talk. I am easing in. How are you?
I'm good. You just got back yesterday, I think?
Last night. Yeah.
Last night. We're recording this Thursday morning. So you were out in Las Vegas in the kind of depressing daytime casino environment for Shop Talk, talking to a lot of brands and retailers and cool people, right?
Danny, I have to tell you, I was like amateur hour. It was my very first Shop Talk. I was a little overwhelmed. I didn't manage my time efficiently or correctly as I should have. So it was like speed dating. Like I booked so many interviews with very amazing executives who gave me the time of day. And yet I didn't understand if it wasn't in the press lounge or the media lounge, which many of the interviews were, like if we were meeting at a cafe, like it wasn't just like pop over to the cafe, but it was like a 20-minute walk. Mm-hmm. So I left some people hanging. Yes. So thanks y'all if you were there and dealing with me.
I noticed the same thing last year when I was there. It's very, the hotels are very big, and I was late to multiple interviews because I was trying to figure out where they were.
Yes.
but we will get a dispatch from you about some of the things you saw there, some of the people you talked to for our first topic. And then after that, we're going to talk about the Nordstrom family attempting to take Nordstrom private. And then finally, we're going to talk about this, you know, something a little more fun, this Gap and Palace collaboration that which just came out, I thought was very cool. But we can also talk a little bit about Zac Posen taking over at Gap, because I don't think we talked about that last month when that was announced.
Good call.
So we'll get into that. Let's start with Shop Talk. So aside from taking a long time to get to the interviews, tell us a little bit about, some of the stuff you saw and people you talked to. And first off, for the people who don't know, probably most of our listeners know Shop Talk, but it's a big conference every year in Las Vegas focused on retail, e-commerce, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. Not just a fashion focus, but there's a lot of fashion and apparel people there usually. So we always like to go, and you know, a lot of good conversations come out of it. So yeah, tell me about what you saw there. Any prevailing themes?
Yeah, there were a couple. And a lot of different people were saying like they thought the theme of the week was retail media networks, which I don't necessarily agree. Other people thought it was like the return to retail. I think these are all kind of a couple years old. It wasn't quite so buzzy to me, although the return to retail, there was some interesting conversation about the importance of it in international markets. Like if you want to expand internationally, you have to do that through physical retail more so than you would in the States, because we're more like heavily reliant, or we have more use of e-commerce. And also to reach Gen Z, more Gen Z shoppers are shopping in stores. And there was also some good conversation about the cost of marketing to Gen Z and companies like ThredUp even just pivoting and focusing on millennials, because Gen Z will come around when they get smart to the idea of retail. But the three ideas that I picked up on and thought were the big themes of the week were obviously the power of AI, and that came up in regards to search and talking to Google. I wrote a story about how Google and ThredUp are, I guess, revamping their search for ThredUp. It's about an outfit builder and the opportunity to really it pulls in suggestions based on what you have or what you're searching for to complete the look. And Google is even like expanding beyond the Google lens with this idea of Dreamer, which a spokesperson was telling me, like, basically come up with something in your head, which I don't know. Fashion girls do this a lot. I don't know if you do this, Danny, but you're like, you have this perfect outfit in your mind for a party. Like you might've made it up. So you just like, you can spit this out to Google now, this idea in your mind. It'll come up with three like AI driven or developed images of this idea, and then like looks that actually exist on the market and are shoppable that fit these three looks that are very comparable. So anyway, it's AI in regards to search, AI in regards to marketing. I'm writing a story on beauty incubator Mesa and how they're creating AI-driven videos for their marketing. There's nothing real in these videos. They're beautiful. It works mm-hmm. because it's fine fragrance, and those fine fragrance campaigns are already very unrealistic. So what's the difference? So, so interesting. And then I'm just going to bounce around. My number two theme, yeah. get ready, was just the importance of first-party data. And obviously, everything's happening with cookies and privacy and everything's changing there. But Baze talked about this and how Adila Hussein Johnson is who I talked to, their president. And she called the first party data her greatest challenge and dealing with it and navigating that and how it's really shaken up their approach to marketing. And she anticipates it will be incredibly challenging this year. I talked to Britt Olson at On Running, and she was relating that to why they're starting loyalty programs and the importance of maintaining a community via their run clubs, things such as that. And then finally, I talked to Libby Straken at Free People, and she was talking about driving people to their lives, not on TikTok, not on Instagram, but they do these like through Bamboozer, these lives on their site, and people actually tune in and come for them because they're actually intentionally coming for this purpose as opposed to just scrolling on their feed. But at the same time, they get the first party data of people who come onto the site and maybe log on to watch the live. So first party data. Then my last dealio was just the fall of the marketing funnel. Heard this mm-hmm. a lot. Basically, you're shopping everywhere, and influencers are no longer, they used to be top of funnel, and now they're, you know, salespeople. So I talked to Kristen Dolan at Influential. She was talking about, which is, P.S., the largest influencer agency. So she has a lot of great experience, and she was just talking about the fact that they don't speak in funnel anymore, and influencers are everything. Shopping's everywhere. Google was talking about how search is now top of funnel. It used to be more mid to lower funnel. Scott Lux at Esprit, who I'm going to have on the podcast next week, I believe, but he was just talking about there is no funnel anymore. And again, basically, shopping's everywhere, marketing's everywhere. People are talking about linking with different tech companies to be able to just basically spit out their marketing to across channels to connected TV, but also spit out their product pages in various places, new places that they hadn't before. So anyway, there's a lot of talk. I'm talking a lot, but it was just like this vibe That's that okay. we're on the cusp of something major, and like all of this technology is like bubbling and it's just like about to hit and change everything. So be ready is like the name of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in there to talk about, particularly. So I was thinking with first party data, something I think is interesting is that at the same time as first party data is so powerful and so important, it also feels like there's fewer channels for that because everything's being concentrated into like Instagram mostly, but TikTok, which are platforms that you don't own. And so it seems to me like the trick is how do you get people from the platform that you don't own where the data is not yours, like TikTok, to the platforms that you do own, like your own website or email or something like that, where the data is yours. I don't know if there's a, you know, good strategy about how to like make that jump or get people to make that jump. Yeah. But that to me strikes me as the most difficult part.
I think you're right. I heard from a couple, which I think is one way to navigate this. I don't know if they said it directly about how they're newly launching apps. On Running talked about that, mm-hmm. and they're offering exclusives and like, you know, running maps and different things like that to get that first party data. I know Shein has an app that's thriving. I met with them as well. So yeah, I think apps is one way that brands are trying to keep that data.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but like my standard for downloading an app is pretty high.
Yes. Like I don't have a lot of storage left on my phone, man.
Yeah, I've got a lot of apps. And like I also try new apps a good amount, but I'm very rarely would I download like a brand's app. And I only have maybe one or two. I think I have the Nike app because you get some rewards and I've bought enough stuff. But beyond, I'm like, it really needs to be a brand that I engage with a lot or something, or even a retailer. Like, I don't have a ton of shopping apps. I had the Mr. Porter app for a while and then I couldn't afford anything. So I deleted it because I was not using it a lot. Yeah. But I don't know about you. I feel like it takes a lot to get me to download an app versus I will just go to a website, you know, because it's less commitment.
Yeah, I'm with you. Maybe it's just the way I shop, or maybe it's the fact that some of these kind of newer retail models have been more advanced in terms of their personalization. But the apps that I tend to have are either resale, like First Dibs or The Real Real or Vestiaire, or like Rent the Runway and Nuuly. And I actually use
like
them.
Like a service.
Yeah, and they're also more affordable, and that's kind of the way I shop. So take it or leave it. I'm not sure really why I have those ones.
Yeah. Well, and then last thing I want to ask you about for Shop Talk. So I just wrote this in my luxury briefing this week, but a bunch of people have told me that if you want to get fundraising, the best way is to just mention AI somewhere in your pitch. And it's like the only thing that will get investors interested right now. So I feel like I'm not surprised to hear that that was a big topic of conversation this year. It was a big topic last year, frankly, too, when I was there. I wonder if in a year or two from now, we'll see which of those pitches and, you know, ideas and possibilities of what AI can do turn out to be like legit and real and have a big impact, and which kind of like flame out a little bit. You know, I feel like it takes a year or two or maybe more for that cycle to complete. There's right now we're in the hype, you know, the peak of the hype where there's a million ideas of different ways it can work, and then we'll see the reality of, you know, what's actually possible.
Yeah.
But the idea of using it for, you know, like you said, the fragrance marketing, where the product itself, I mean, it's kind of intangible anyway. You know, you can look at the bottle, I guess, but the product is not something that can really be communicated through video anyway. That's kind of an interesting use case.
Yes. So check out my story on that. But yeah, I think that how people talked about AI in terms of like their investors and such, or fundraising, it was just basically like you need to have mention AI in your earnings. Like you need to make it apparent that you're actually leveraging this emerging technology that has big implications. And I wonder, again, like you said, maybe in years to come, I think what will happen is it will be like the way that Britt Olsen at On talked about retail media networks. She's like, everybody's talking about this, but she's like, and I didn't really understand that phrase. And then when they explained what they meant, she was like, I was like, duh, yeah, we've been doing this forever. Like, yes, retail media networks. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it will just become like the norm, and it won't be such the buzzword is how I see it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Cool. I'm glad you had a good time, and I'm glad you're back because it sounds like it was very busy.
So fun.
But thank you for the dispatch. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit now about Nordstrom. So there was a report this week in Reuters that the Nordstrom family is currently looking at options for taking the company private. They reportedly asked Morgan Stanley and Centerview Partners, which are both investment banks, to start shopping around for private equity partners to strike a deal and maybe take the company private if possible. The Nordstrom family tried something similar back in 2017, but it was not successful. I have some thoughts on why they might want to do that. I'll go first.
Yeah, I would love to know.
But,
go ahead.
Yeah, so basically, I think we've talked about something similar before on this podcast, but I think Nordstrom senses that they're going to be going through a little bit of a down patch, you know, just like a lot of retail, especially luxury retail. We've talked about, obviously, Farfetch and Matches, but, you know, Saks, and I think they're all having a little bit of a harder time, and I think when you're publicly traded and you've got shareholders looking over your shoulder, even if you know that like this is going to be a 6-month thing and then it's going to be back, and like you know having the shareholder looking over your shoulder can make it a very stressful time that maybe is like not necessary. So I totally see why a company would want to be private like through a hard period like that, so they could just make the decisions that they need to make and not feel like they have to, you know, justify everything and explain everything. I don't know if it's going to be successful. It might go the same way as their 2017 attempt, but I can see the reasoning behind it. And they're not like doing terrible or anything. The other thing I was going to mention is Nordstrom Rack is huge for them. It grew 15% last quarter. They're definitely going to be investing more in that. So it's not like they're, you know, struggling or anything, but I just feel like the stress, I imagine, and from what I've heard from people at publicly traded companies, of having every single decision you make like out in public and, you know, ripped apart. I don't know. That sounds very difficult.
No.
So that's my thought.
I'm with you. I think that they want the chance to like restructure, make some big changes. There's mm-hmm. So I did meet with the Nordstrom team at Shop Talk and also several brands like On and Baze. We're talking about like the power of Nordstrom as a partner. But anyway, Nordstrom is jazzed about Nordstrom Rack. Like, it's apparent, and that is thriving. And they kind of do resale their own way. Like, the person who shops at Ross isn't shopping maybe Nordstrom Rack the way that Nordstrom Rack sees it, or Nordstrom sees it, which, talking to their team, it's like, mate, you're not coming here to treasure hunt necessarily, although you might find like a random like Dior bag. You're coming here because you want to shop the brands you love for a more affordable price, like Free People or Frame. And you can kind of, they have all these brands have an off-price strategy, and it may be a little bit of a different product, but I don't know, you get your fix. So I feel like Nordstrom is, they do their own thing. They're probably like, investors get off of me when they like make a change, and it's like they need time to adjust, and they're seeing all this backlash. But we know that they innovated in terms of like being one of the first that we were talking about in terms of doing drop shipping, which really takes a lot of the stress out of off brands in terms of selling through wholesale partners. And one of the first retailers that was doing teaming with or looping in the direct-to-consumer brands, bringing them into the wholesale channel. So anyway, I feel like they move fast. They definitely, my theory is they want to transform around more focus on Nordstrom Rack. I don't know what that means for the main price store, but anyway, I'm with you. I think they just need some time. They may go public again, but they want a restructuring.
I would guess they would. Yeah, I would guess they would after they do whatever restructure they're planning. And like you said, the looping in direct-to-consumer brands, I feel like I still talk to brands all the time and I ask them, what's your, you know, wholesale setup? And they're like, we're entirely direct-to-commerce and Nordstrom. There's a lot of brands that Nordstrom is their only wholesale partner. And then, you know, we've also talked about specialty stores are also growing as a channel, but there's a lot who are not in any other major department stores except Nordstrom. So they're still targeting that kind of brand and still seem to be having a lot of success with recruiting them. So yeah, I wonder if that might be a big focus for any restructure as well, like any changes to those kinds of partnerships. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. TBD, but anyway, Nordstrom fans.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about our last topic of the episode. Wanted to talk about something a little more fun, a little lighter, but there's this very fun collaboration between Gap and Palace, which is part of Palace's ongoing spring 2024 drops. They've done, I think, 7 or 8 of them already. And Palace obviously is like a very skate-focused streetwear brand. The collection is very 90s inspired, and also it's extensive. It's like 55 pieces, including kids' clothes, which is the first for Palace. So it's kind of a big collaboration with a big focus on sort of 90s aesthetics, 90s and skate aesthetics, which obviously Palace is a skate brand. And I feel like the 90s and skateboarding are like inextricably linked to me, maybe because in the 90s, I was like a little kid who liked skateboarding. But I don't know. There's something about like that era and that subculture that I feel like work really well together. And the founder of Palace, Lev Tanju, was saying that part of the inspiration was wearing Gap, in the 90s with his friends and skateboarding, and how he said it was like kind of preppy, which sort of was like a good contrast with skateboarding and ripping up the khakis and stuff. So I don't know. It makes a lot of sense. A question I have for you, Jill, is do you feel like the 90s kind of aesthetic is on its way up or on its way out? Because I feel like there's been, you know, kind of a 90s resurgence for a while. That Gap logo hoodie got really popular a couple years ago. But now I feel like maybe we're shifting more toward a Y2K kind of thing, which is similar but distinct. I don't know. Do you think that's on its way up or out?
That's interesting. It reminds me of, I'm name dropping all my Shop Talk conversations because it just happened, but like.
No, yeah, they're fresh. Yes. Yeah.
I'm talking to the folks at Esprit, Scott Lux, who's the head of their like innovation and digital. He was talking about how they're treating Esprit, which like people my age, like that's nostalgic. It was hot in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And so like they want to attract a Gen Z customer. So they really like, do they reference nostalgia? Do they reference their heyday? Like question mark, question mark, question mark. So I think, you know, the 90s nostalgia thing probably works for a generation. like millennials? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess millennials maybe. And I think it's kind of here to stay. But I'm with you. You had that story about like sexy's in. I think that it's moved to more like an edge. There's more edge happening in fashion now. It's mm-hmm. kind of grunge meets sex meets nakedness. but I don't know, like yeah. Olivia Rodrigo, there's some like alternative rock happening. This used to be my vibe, yeah. believe it or not.
yeah. yeah. We're entering the Pearl Jam era of fashion right now. No, but grunge is a great way to put it. I mean, and that's like, I think of grunge as a 90s kind of phenomenon and like the Seattle like flannel and ripped jeans kind of look. I think you're right. That's actually, I haven't seen anyone describe it specifically as like grunge or like alternative rock. But
about your flannel?
Are Gen Z listening to Jane's Addiction? That's what we need to know.
I like Jane's Addiction. I hope so.
yeah. But it is funny that like, I feel like sometimes nostalgic trends can take off even among people who were like not around for that nostalgia. I mean, I was born in the early 90s and I remember a lot of kids my age being really into 80s stuff, even though none of us were like alive for that.
Yes, that's true.
There were 80s themed parties that I went to like in high school and college and stuff. And it was close enough that we sort of, I think maybe recognized most of the references maybe from our older siblings or parents or whatever, but still like felt a little bit exotic, I guess. I don't know. And when you're 15 to 20, there's not much from your own life that you can be super nostalgic for because it's been so short.
That's
so
a good point.
I don't know. Sometimes I think like there could be Gen Z kids who were born in like 2005 who are getting really into 90s stuff yeah. in that same way.
Totally.
You know?
Or maybe they're a sibling or somebody they missed out on the cool fashion. I know. I always think of myself as like a 70s girl and I like bell bottoms and I like to do my Farrah hair. Mm-hmm. And yet like I was born within like 1 month before the end of the 70s. Like I didn't exactly right. live it. So
yeah, you weren't actually around for any of that stuff, yeah. but it still spoke to you. And I do feel like maybe one decade before your birth is a good, you know, yes. barometer. Like I feel like a lot of people end up being into some of that kind of stuff. One final thing we should talk about is, because I don't think we talked about it on this podcast last month, but Zach Posen is the new creative director of Gap, which was announced, I think, beginning of February, so about a month and a half since that happened. I don't know. What do you make of that? I feel like it was a little bit of a surprising choice at the time. I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah, what do you think?
I thought it was like a total 180 from like working with Kanye, like, you know, and then Zach Posen, yeah. who's more known for like glamour and classic, which Gap is classic. It's a different kind of classic, like all American.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in this like wait to see because different creative directors have really shift gears and like proven very successful. It's very new focus for him. They also have a new chief executive, yeah. Richard Dixon. And I think that together they're moving fast. Like in the last maybe month, they've had all of these collaborations with, how do you say it? Tyla. I'm not cool. You guys. Yeah, and Dapper Dan and Jungle. Anyway, three different collaborations dropped very rapidly. And he made it. There was a quote that he said it at a recent event that's like, we're a pop culture brand. And I think that they want to really like come out with a showing like we're still cool. And this palace definitely resonates with streetwear community. So I think they're moving fast together and I'm liking it. I love this palace collaboration. So cute. But I think TBD again yeah. for me, wait and see.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as you. A little bit of a left field pick, but wait and see. I mean, who knows how long this palace collaboration was in the works before he started. I'm guessing it was
because yeah.
I think for a 55-piece collection, they probably were working on it for a while. But yeah, like there might be, you know, more collaborations like this and, you know, more interesting left field kind of moves from them. We'll see. But yeah, I do think it's an interesting choice. I think that's all the time we have for this week. But Jill, it's always so great to talk to you. Thanks for giving us your report from Shop Talk as well.
Thank you. So fun.
For those of you listening, don't forget to give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to this, because that helps us out so much. And don't forget to subscribe to the Glossy Podcast to hear interviews with industry insiders every Wednesday and week in review episodes every Friday.